It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Later in this hour, our series of candidate conversations continues. We'll have Pat Murphy with us live, the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 1st Congressional District. So those of you especially listening in Iowa's northeast corner, the northeast part of the state, which is Iowa's 1st Congressional District, please think of some questions you'd like to ask Pat Murphy, the Democratic candidate. But first, the new health law has increased patient demand for medical services, and in turn, it's worsened the shortage of primary care providers. So in the next few minutes, we want to examine osteopathic medicine. We'll find out why osteopathic medical schools across the country, including Des Moines University's medical school, are seeing an uptick in interest. Joining us to talk about it, Dr. J.D. Polk is the dean of the Medical School of Des Moines University in our Des Moines studio. Dr. Polk, welcome.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having us.
Katie Eggerman is with Dean Polk. She is a medical student pursuing a career at the Des Moines, the medical school at Des Moines University. Katie Eggerman, thank you for coming in.
Good afternoon, Ben.
Let's talk a little bit. We want to talk a little bit later about the difference between an MD and a DO, because that's something I think a lot of people are unclear about. But first, I understand, Dean Polk, that osteopathic medical schools are seeing really an increase in interest from prospective students. The figures I have from your school, 4,500 students applying for 200 spots in the program at Des Moines University. What trends are you seeing in enrollment from prospective students, the interest?
Yeah, Ben, I think that's almost ubiquitous across the country right now. We're seeing about a 3 to 5% increase in applications across the board at medical schools across the country. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. I think probably first and foremost, you know, medicine still remains a profession that people are very interested in for very altruistic reasons. But also, you know, medicine has changed a little bit to where in the old days when you were a primary care physician, you were on all the time, nights, weekends. Your time was not your own. And now there's a trend to where the physicians are working more for groups and for hospitals themselves, to where there's a balance where they can actually be a physician and actually have a personal life as well.
Mm-hmm. What impact do you feel in these early days as we're still transitioning into the Affordable Care Act, the new health care law? What impact do you see is having on enrollment in your medical school?
Well, I think enrollment and demand is still there, and many medical schools are increasing the number of slots that they have for students, developing satellite campuses, and also developing new medical schools across the country to meet the demand of the applicants and the demand that the Affordable Care Act is creating. Estimates anywhere from 90,000 to 200,000 new primary care physicians will be needed by 2020. And I think the medical school establishments are stepping up to that. But the backlog is going to be on the residencies.
Mm. Okay, let's talk about that in a minute. But let's get to the point that I wanted to bring out, too, to tell us the difference between a DO and an MD, a doctor of osteopathic medicine and a medical doctor. How are those different?
Well, there's probably many more similarities than there are differences. Both MDs and DOs are licensed physicians that train 4 years in medical school and do residency afterwards, many of them in the same programs. But there's some philosophical differences that started about 100 years ago, mostly looking at holistic care, wellness, as opposed to sick care, and incorporation of manual medicine as well as traditional medicine, i.e. surgery and pharmacologic different remedies. And so, you know, the majority of it, I think, is based on keeping the patient well, although, you know, our MD brethren have embraced that as well over the last several decades. And so we no longer have the market cornered on wellness programs and being holistic.
Mm-hmm. So to help clarify this difference, how might a visit to a DO be different than an MD? I walk in, I have some complaint. How would a DO approach that perhaps differently? And I recognize that you saying there is an overlap now.
Yeah, there is an overlap, but it might be different in that, let's take a, for example, you had bronchitis or something that's routine like that. They'd still evaluate you the same way, listening to your lungs. Depending on whether it was viral or bacterial, they would still prescribe you an antibiotic, potentially. Still do the inhaler and things that you would normally see at another physician's office, but they would also probably do a structural exam. Many of us who have ever had a bronchitis and had a coughing fit, sometimes you can get that rib soreness or feel like you've got to catch what people will describe as getting a rib stuck or something else. And that's sometimes the intercostal muscles, the muscles in between the ribs that you use when coughing, and they're not used to you cough, and you can get a spasm in that muscle just like you can in your calf or your hamstring. And so the DO might try to relieve that spasm as well so that you can take a deep breath in addition to prescribe the antibiotics or the aerosol machine or the inspirometer or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. The medical school at Des Moines University offers DO degrees, but MDs as well or not?
No, DO degrees, although we also have the graduate programs in physical therapy, doctorate in physical therapy, the physician assistant program, the doctor in podiatric medicine, and several other degree programs as well.
Mm-hmm. Just one last point on the difference between those two doctor degrees. Are those degrees viewed differently in the medical community, aside from the philosophy? Is one degree perhaps viewed higher or more comprehensive than the other?
You know, I think that may have been the case 50 years ago. It's certainly not the case today. Our students, 65% of the graduates go into what are called ACGME residencies, which are the MD residencies, and become surgeons, cardiothoracic surgeons, neurosurgeons, ER doctors, OB-GYNs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And once you have the students in those residencies and mixing with those residencies, I don't know that there's that large of a difference, other than the fact that they still approach the patient differently and their mm-hmm. Their roots are still different.
Mm-hmm. The picture I'm getting from you, Dean Polk, is that we had the two distinct origins and branches sort of growing together over the last few years, last few decades.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that is true. And recently there's been a merger or memorandum of agreement between the Osteopathic Association and the Graduate Colleges Association on the MD side mm-hmm. To make one large group of residencies. So the MDs and DOs will be doing the same residencies, and ironically, even an MD might do a DO residency.
We'll talk about more about residency in just a moment, but I want to hear from Katie Eggerman, who's a medical student at your medical school in Des Moines University. Katie, you are from Missouri, I see.
Yes.
You did. Why did you pick Des Moines University?
Well, originally I was just looking at medical schools within the proximity, and when I'm from northern Missouri, and so when I came up to visit DMU, I fell in love with the campus, and you hear that over and over again of students that come to visit. It's a very welcoming community. It's a small, just professional and graduate health profession students, and it just felt like the right fit for me and the home for me, and I haven't been disappointed at all.
Mm-hmm. What is your specialty? What are you aiming for?
I will be applying to pediatric programs this fall.
Okay. Why a DO school instead of an MD?
When I was applying to medical school, I was in grad school working on a master's of public health. And as I started researching more about the differences, what I was really enjoying most in my graduate studies was looking at all the different factors that go into a person's health and the things that they can do to stay well. And that paralleled so well with what I was reading historically about osteopathic medicine. And like Dean Polk pointed out, yes, the gap has been closing, but I really wanted to go somewhere where the foundations of my education would be with those principles. And I've found fantastic mentors, and the curriculum here has really stayed true to that.
Mm-hmm. What did you find out? And I'm assuming you researched this as well. There's a marketability of that degree compared to an MD.
Well, I've always wanted to go into primary care, was kind of how I always pictured myself fitting into the medical team. And that was really also a big historical piece of osteopathic medicine, is that they do tend to train more primary care physicians and where we really where a lot of the focus of the curriculum could be. I mean, we practice in every specialty of medicine, but we do get a very strong support in curriculum in just getting those basic foundations of primary care. So that was where I wanted to start.
Mm-hmm. I want to reach out to our listeners and ask if you have any questions about the future of medical education or about osteopathic medicine in particular. We have two guests who can tackle those questions. Are glad to do that. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook. Find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. And or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Let's talk a little bit more about residencies. To you first, Dean Polk, of the Medical School of Des Moines University. So the residency, just to be clear, at the stage of medical training, this is after a person has become a physician, received that degree, that medical doctor degree, or the doctor of osteopathic medicine, and they have a stage in which they're further trained in a residency. What's been happening with the residency programs?
Well, the residency programs predominantly are supported by Medicare dollars, and quite frankly, they haven't grown much and have been capped since 1997 on the limits for those residencies. So although we've been increasing the number of medical students to try to meet the demands for the Affordable Care Act, the supply chain is coming through for medical students, but there are not an increase in residencies. And so right now, there's roughly about 26,000 first-year residency slots and about 37,000 people applying for them. When you also take into account the foreign medical graduates that are applying, the Caribbean schools, and the DO and the MD schools. And so there's really a mismatch.
So why the bottleneck? How did that come about, or has it been there for a long time?
Well, I think it really comes down to finances, in that without those Medicare dollars to help supplement and build a residency, it's very hard for hospitals who have a slim margin to finance those on their own.
Mm-hmm. You are looking forward to a residency, Katie Eggerman, at some point. Where have you looked into? Where do you think you'll go for your residency?
Well, I'm currently doing that research right now. My application will be sent out this September and start residency next July, hopefully in a pediatric residency. But I've been researching all over the Midwest and where, you know, we might fit in. And so there's a pretty wide range in how many programs there are in each state. There's a wide range in sizes. Some will train 6 pediatricians at a hospital. Others will train 25 pediatricians at a hospital. So I've been trying to gather as much information as possible. And students tend to cast a pretty wide net because it's very competitive to get into residencies. And so we try to look at as many options as possible.
Are you looking in the Des Moines area specifically?
I am. Blank Children's Hospital does train 6 pediatricians each year. They have a total of 18 because it's a 3-year program, and Iowa City also has an additional 13 slots. So there are 19 positions or opportunities for a student interested in pediatrics in the state of Iowa. So those will definitely be two programs that I'll be looking into.
Dean Polk, what happens to those the overabundance of doctors there if they cannot find a residency? What happens?
Well, that's a good question, Ben. And a lot of times folks have to sit out. They'll do what's called a transitional year. And sometimes they will go on to do another graduate degree, an MPH or other things, while they're waiting for their slot to open up. But it's highly competitive right now.
Mm. Okay. 1-866-780-9100. Your questions about the future of medical education or about osteopathic medicine. Dr. J.D. Polk, the Dean of the Medical School of Des Moines University, with us, along with one of the students there in the medical school, Katie Eggerman. 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Barb. Barb is in Urbandale. Welcome to our program, Barb. What interests you about this conversation?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
I wonder if the guest could speak to the roles that physicians need to take, the leadership roles that physicians need to take in guiding healthcare policy and healthcare legislation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've gone through several years of that being a big part of policy and politics. Dean Polk.
Oh, that's a great question, and I appreciate Barb asking that. But Barb's absolutely right. In the 1970s, we kind of ceded authority of healthcare, quite frankly. When the HMOs came to task and came to town, a lot of physicians said, you know, I got into medicine, not into business or into policy, and so I want to treat patients. And you started to see what used to be the CEOs of hospitals or the chief medical officers of hospitals start to change, and the CEOs start to be MBAs, et cetera. And now I think you're seeing a slight swing back to where physicians are realizing they need to reengage in policy and take leadership But we're still a little bit behind the eight ball. Whereas Katie can be board certified in pediatrics, or I can be board certified in emergency medicine, there is no board certification in medical management and policy. And so, until we codify that and make that a specialty that physicians can go into as well, I think we'll still be a little bit behind.
Mm-hmm. What is the appropriate role of medical doctors, doctors of osteopathic medicine, in forming policy, the input there?
I think it's important because when you've treated patients and you are patient-centric, then you don't lose that focus. And so you want to make sure that when you implement a policy, legislation, and or business practices, that you keep the patient at the forefront and that the outcomes of the patient are what motivate you, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And, that sometimes that gets lost when you are working with folks that have never been on the receiving end of medical care or have never worked with patients on a daily basis.
Do you see our future policies being more patient-centered, reorienting, in also because of the Affordable Care Act?
I do, and I think you've already seen that with certain segments of the Affordable Care Act being enacted. We've moved more to paying for preventive medicine, which we didn't before. The medical home, where we have patients, instead of being passed around from doctor to doctor, are having a medical home concept where there's collaboration and coordination of a patient's care. So I think you're already seeing elements of that.
Mm-hmm. Let's have you tackle this tweet from Luke. He tweeted to IPR Talk. He wrote, "I most MDs I know don't think too highly of DOs, doctors of osteopathic medicine, and some frankly regard osteopathic medicine as a joke. Anything to say about that?"
Well, let's see. I was the chief of space medicine at NASA and the principal deputy assistant secretary of Homeland Security. So I don't think that you don't get to be in those two positions by being a joke. Mm-hmm. So
where did that come from? Because I mentioned that, too. If it would be a comment that was really far afield, I wouldn't have brought it up. But it is a perception out there, and you just have to do a Google search to see that some unflattering things come up about osteopathic medicine. Why would that be?
I think it's a naive misconception, quite frankly. Probably the biggest problem with the osteopathic profession has been marketing. We haven't gotten out there to market. Folks don't realize that the students have a 3.57 to get in the door here. They think that that we have a lower GPA than the other medical schools, and that's not true. Actually, we have a higher GPA than the mean. Mm-hmm. And the MCAT scores are just as high, if not higher as well, at DMU. And so there's a lot of misconceptions, and I think it comes down to marketing. Now, some of that may have been differences in years past. Obviously, we send our physicians and have a lot more physicians that go into primary care.
How does that compare with MDs? Do more DOs go into primary care than MDs?
Absolutely. We graduate about 53% of the current class into primary care, and defined as family practice, internal medicine, and pediatrics.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that DOs, with the emphasis in the Affordable Care Act on well care rather than sick care, do you see that DOs actually matching up better with the aims of the Affordable Care Act?
I do, actually, because we've had that holistic medical home mentality in our philosophy, so it's not new to us. We didn't have to really change strategies with the Affordable Care Act. And we already graduate a very large percentage of our physicians in primary care, which may not have the prestige of being a cardiothoracic surgeon or what have you. Maybe that's where the naive misconceptions come from.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're very well aligned with the needs of healthcare coming up in the next several decades.
Katie Eggerman, what do you see as your chief challenges going forward as we have a new frontier of medicine in this country?
Well, I think one thing that Dean Polk touched on is really polishing up that marketing that we can do as far as expressing to patients and to people that might not know quite as much what osteopathic medicine is, and to be able to really articulate that and to show them. And I think the most important thing that we do is to show people what an osteopathic physician is, not to tell them what an osteopathic physician is. But at the same time, to be able to step into an elevator with a person, and by the time you've gotten to the 30th floor, to be able to explain to them what osteopathic medicine is, what the differences are, and how we can care for them.
Mm-hmm. The University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine in Iowa City, of course, has a national reputation. Mm-hmm. Dean Polk, are you working at all with them? What is the relationship there?
Yeah, actually, I met with their dean about a month ago. And, you know, obviously we have discussions back and forth about what the needs for Iowa are. And the dean there and I both agree. She's a great lady. She and I both agree on the needs for graduate medical education in Iowa in order to keep as many residents as we can, because most students, when they do their residency, they usually live or settle somewhere close to where they did their residency, and that's about the only way we're going to keep physicians coming back to Iowa. Mm-hmm.
Let's take a quick call if we can, a conversation wrapping up in just a minute or two. Sue is with us from Pleasant Hill. Hi, Sue. Please make it quick. What's your question?
Hi, I will. I was raised with the osteopathic tradition. I am in my 60s, and I realize the prejudice that went with DOs at one time. And the thing that was pointed out to me, as our family doctor explained to me, is that DOs take the very same licensing test and medical test as MDs, always have. There is no difference, and when they're licensed by the state of Iowa, they've taken the very same test, the very same credentials. We just had something extra in the fact that they understood the entire structure of the central nervous system and were able to do adjustments to help us heal our bodies better.
Mm-hmm. Sue, thank you for that from Pleasant Hill. We have to go in just a few seconds, but Dean Polk, do you think MD is certainly something that is on the tip of everybody's tongue? Everybody knows what an MD is. When you throw out DO, not everybody knows. Do you think that will change in the future?
I do. I think, right now about one out of every 10 physicians is a DO that's graduating this year. And we'll reach a tipping point at some point to where the rest of the folks are mainstream and know what a DO is, and I think we'll get a little bit better at our marketing. I think also the merger of the residencies, both DO and MD, will break down a lot of the misconceptions that are out there, like your one Twitter follower.
Okay. Dr. J.D. Polk, Dean of the Medical School of Des Moines University, thank you for coming into our Des Moines studio, as well as Katie Eggerman. Good luck with your medical career starting at the medical school at Des Moines University, Katie.
Thank you, Ben.
All right. Thank you both. Coming up in just a moment, our series of candidate conversations continues. Pat Murphy joins us in just a moment, the Democratic candidate for Iowa's 1st Congressional District. We'll talk with him about the Affordable Care Act, a number of things, also minimum wage, education, a number of other things. If you have a question for Pat Murphy, especially if you live in the northeast part of the state where that district is, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org.